back into regular session.
So moved.
Second, please.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Mr. Moore, would you like to maybe give us a broad brush overview of how we're going to conduct this meeting?
Sure, be glad to, Mr. President. As indicated, this was published as a workshop. As such, it is not a regular meeting of the council for the purposes of making motions and conducting that type of business. Its main purpose is educational in nature, and it's for the purpose of reviewing the status of the county plan with the county council, planning and zoning, and with staff members. The meeting will be conducted by Mr. Paul Driscoll, who has worked on the plan. The only speakers today will be Mr. Driscoll, county council members, planning and zoning members, and any staff members that they may request to speak. This is a meeting that, although the public can observe, as a public meeting, there is no public input. As ordinances are adopted at a later date, then obviously at any of those public hearings for any ordinances, the public at that point would have input and be able to speak. So Mr. Phillips, if there's no objection, I believe Mr. Driscoll could take over the meeting at this point.
Mr. Driscoll, I appreciate you coming down today. We have tried to put a time frame on this meeting so that we can get through a lot in a reasonable amount of time. If you could attempt to follow that as much as possible, we'd appreciate it.
Sure, no problem.
All yours.
County Council adopted the plan in 2008, the comprehensive plan, and then it was subsequently certified by Governor Minner. The comprehensive plan states that the county should consider, on a case-by-case basis, an entire laundry list of potential zoning ordinances, additional regulations to regulate development and preservation in the county. Just taking one step backward, to achieve certification, we had to be reviewed by the state, by the state's governor's advisory council, and a review by each of the major state agencies that have relevance to this plan, including DENREC, State Office of Planning, the agricultural officials, the economic development officials, housing, et cetera. And just when we put that first draft of the plan together, we got a review letter that consisted of over 30 pages with suggested changes to our initial draft. So our obligation at that point was to redraft that plan so that we could come closer to satisfying the state and at the same time still secure the support of a majority of the members of County Council for whom we were, when I say we, URDC, for whom we were preparing the plan at that time. And if you recall, and you probably won't have to think too far back to recall this, at the heart of the issue was who really has ultimate say over development and preservation issues in Sussex County. Is it Dover or is it Georgetown? And you may recall that the first draft of the plan, for example, had extensive references to the state resource areas, the SRAs. And as a result of legal action on that, in the second draft, we expunged all references to SRAs. At the same time, we on virtually every other topic in that comprehensive plan, as listed on the table of contents, we attempted to steer a very careful course between what the state was campaigning for in order to achieve that certification and at the same time to reflect what County Council believed and wanted to see in the plan. And in neither case did the document succeed entirely. We never got a unanimous vote from the council. We never got a unanimous vote from the governor's advisory council. And one of the state's biggest concerns was how many enforceable ordinances will county council subsequently adopt after the plan was passed. And to that end, we have prepared an analysis of what the county did since the adoption of the comprehensive plan and some suggested courses of action with respect to other ordinances that the county has not yet acted upon, the ones that were listed in the comprehensive plan. And according to our outline here, we'd like to start the meat of today with looking at two potential ordinances. One is an ordinance that would create an agricultural industrial district, and the second is an ordinance that would provide additional environmental protections in the ES1 overlay zoning district. You have this memo in front of you, and the first of those two ordinances is outlined on Appendix A, which is on page 13 of that memo.
Just find that way that we're here. I got memo draft. It says draft on the top. Is that right, Paul?
Yeah. January 13?
Yes. I got it.
From me to Mr. Baker.
Gotcha.
Now, the purpose of this proposed ordinance, as listed there, is really to provide appropriate opportunities for large, agriculturally intensive industries to group together. One, it makes it more convenient for them to operate. Two, it mitigates any potential effects that those types of intensive uses may have on surrounding areas. We have listed in the second section of that proposed ordinance a range of permitted uses. And, of course, this is all draft at this point. But you get the idea by looking down through there: animal processing, farm machine, farm vehicles, fertilizer, sales, and so forth, that we're talking about pretty intensive uses. And we would add that those as permitted uses, and then there would be some special exception uses that, as you know, require that extra level of analysis before the permit is granted, such as biofuel production, storage, and packaging. And we've provided some lot sizes there and some minimum yard requirements and just a couple of additional regulations, for example, that would say any use within this district shall be 5 acres in area, and we didn't want it to be any closer than 100 foot, for example, from a perennial waterway. And I'm trying to summarize here without reading this point by point. But one of the primary aspects of it is that this would not be assigned to a particular area land-wise within the county, but rather would be a voluntary district. That is, if one or more of these type uses wanted to go into operation, they could request to do so under this new AI-1 agricultural industrial district.
Well, can I we need a map. Any chance we get the land use map? One of those boards. Is that, David, somebody could go get that? Maybe two of them or something, one or two.
I'm curious, but I know it's probably way ahead of you, but wondering what would be the incentive for somebody wanting to volunteer.
Yeah. The idea is that they would be able to operate their type of more intensive agricultural.
More intense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In less of a way that might be a nuisance. Mm-hmm. So they wouldn't be a nuisance to their neighbors. Their neighbors wouldn't be a nuisance to them.
Mm-hmm. Continue, please.
Okay. The second of the two ordinances that we're suggesting is Appendix B, found on your memo beginning on page 16. Now, you may recall that during the comprehensive plan formulation process, there was a lot of talk about what in addition could we do to protect those areas, basically in and around the inland bays, in the environmentally sensitive area or the ES1 overlay zoning district. What additional could we do to protect those? And we're suggesting two ideas through this ordinance. One, that we would establish a maximum percentage of the total tract that can have or be covered by impervious surface. And, of course, there'd be a definition of impervious surface. Currently, we don't have that regulation anywhere among any of the zoning districts here in Sussex County. So that would be an added level of protection above and beyond which exists now in any district. Secondly, we'd like to be able to provide an incentive for developers in that area to qualify under these green development, green design projects. Programs, and the Leadership and Environmental Design, or the LEED program, is the certification mechanism by which these are typically recognized. And we're suggesting that, for example, we could allow a developer to construct his residential development at a higher height than what's currently permitted in exchange for the idea that they would be officially certified under the LEED program. Right now, there's basically a 42-foot limit that applies to proposed residential structures in, I believe it's all of the districts in the county. We're suggesting in this instance, should that developer qualify under the Environmental Green Design Program, that we could raise it to 52 feet. And this, again, would be, the idea would be to provide an incentive for somebody to do that type of certified, qualified environmental design.
Do we ask questions as we go, or do we?
If you'd
like. It's going to be so long, I don't know if we get. I'll remember. Question on the 52 feet and the incentive. Does that mean additional density to go with it?
No.
In other words, instead of spreading it out, he'll put it up.
Build up rather than out.
Up rather than out. Okay. Because over the years, as I've been here, I've heard part of the charm of Sussex County versus, say, or I'm primarily speaking of coastal Sussex County, where most of the development has been. The charm has been that we have a lower profile as opposed to our neighboring, you know, beaches south of us in Maryland.
Mm-hmm. And, Ocean City.
And, right. And the appeal is, and that's been the appeal. That's been what's bringing them here. That's the positive thing has been that. So getting higher sometimes, I don't know. You know, I'm out my.
Why is this on residential structures anyway?
Well, I think commercial structures too have a limit of 42 feet. Is that correct?
They also have height.
Everything, just basically 42 feet has been the highest we can build in this county.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I don't know if we're how stuck we are on it, but again, I get concerned about the height of buildings. And when I go to other places, I find more attractive and more appealing lower profile as opposed to higher profile.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're looking for some type of incentive to provide to them so that they would go the green design route. The first thing naturally you consider is density. And then we thought, well, do we really want to be adding density in the ES1 overlay district? What else could we do?
Okay,
that
I understand.
And that was the rationale
okay.
for it.
Okay, makes sense. Yeah, I'm just curious about it. Thank you.
So those were the two new ordinances suggested. Can I please direct you on the to page 2 of the memo that we prepared? And I haven't felt yet like I'm on the hot seat, but I'm going to take my coat off anyhow. So.
It's that sweater.
Now, this is a big undertaking, considering virtually at once, you know, 20-some ordinances and their pertinences, their potential value to the county. So what we wanted to do is organize some way of looking at them. And at our suggestion, we thought that this would be the way to go, to write down specific criteria for you to use. And, of course, you might add your own criteria, but we've provided some suggestions here. Number one, on page 2. And they're listed 1 through 4 there. What existing relevant regulations are already in place? That is, if we adopt a certain ordinance, are we replicating what's already at the state level, at the county level? Are we being redundant? Is there any real compelling purpose for it? Number two, obviously, if we're looking at trying to implement the comprehensive plan through the zoning ordinance, I want to take a look at the goals of those that comprehensive plan. And they are listed there in italics, rather broad statements. Number three, what has changed or what has not changed since the time that the comprehensive plan went into practice? What's the health of the county now, economic conditions? Obviously, there's been a bit of a slowdown since the 2008. And then, and just as importantly, if we adopt a certain regulation or series of regulations, how effectively can this county staff monitor and enforce these regulations? That is, do we have the necessary manpower, the necessary expertise, and so forth? So those are the criteria that we're suggesting that you might want to consider as you consider the potential value of each ordinance listed.
Can I have a question, please?
Yes, ma'am.
Would we also be looking at the number of lots that we've already approved when we look at the economic situation we're in? In other words, when the economy picks up, there are lots of them that are going to be built.
Mm-hmm.
They've already been approved. Probably keep us for years.
Yeah, I've seen the number. I don't recall what it is, but I've seen it, yes.
We don't really have it. We don't have the number.
Well, I can quickly just comment on that. One way we've addressed it in the past, we did it with subdivisions. We did a sunsetting ordinances.
We have that number. We don't have the number of conditional.
But I'm just saying, some of this stuff that has been approved that is just sitting out there, it's been out there X the number of years,
yeah.
And doesn't look like it's viable or you know, time has moved on. There ought to be some sunsetting ordinances for other districts other than just subdivision approval. We only do subdivisions now. We don't do conditional uses. We don't do RPCs. We don't do anything else except subdivisions. And I think, Lawrence, we've sunsetted quite a few at this point, right?
We sunset.
Or I don't know how many.
14 projects.
Okay.
And right now we're looking at them again because it's time to look at them again.
Right. So anyway, sunsetting ordinances would be a way to address a lot of the stuff that we have approved that doesn't seem to be viable.
Okay.
And then we also, some of the stuff that's been approved 20 years ago, maybe regulations have changed and we ought to bring them up, you know, make them come back and come up to snuff with what we are requiring in today's world. So anyway, it's just...
We don't have a sense of where we are.
Yeah, yeah.
We do not.
It's certainly worthy of consideration. The one thing I would say is that I restricted my analysis simply to those things that were proposed in the comp plan, and that wasn't one of them at the time.
Gotcha.
Interesting.
Okay. All right. All right, well, the first thing that we did when we got the big laundry list of ordinances that we were supposed to consider...
We don't have a big map. Okay.
The first thing that we did was take a look at what we have accomplished since 2008. Okay, we have at least a small map in front of everybody?
Everybody's got a small map.
Okay, good. On the top of page 3 of my memo, in boldface are a list of the various ordinances that the county has passed since the comprehensive plan was under consideration, referring, of course, to those that relate to the comprehensive plan, not other ordinances. Wellhead protection, the date is there. Council did approve a strengthening of groundwater protection. As you are aware, Council... passed an additional regulation with an additional ordinance, adding regulations to the forested buffer requirements. As a result of that, the council also passed certain regulations regarding setbacks and buffering and landscaping related items there. And because we enforced or because we strengthened the forest buffer requirements, we thereby addressed the forest buffer item on the in the comprehensive plan list, as well as started taking a whack at the development standards item. The comprehensive plan said counties should consider some additional development standards, and they're detailed in there.
That's under rezoning or conditional use, is it correct? So in other words, because I know some of our subdivisions, I'm told we need an ordinance for planning and zoning to require that they be back off of a road by so many feet.
Setback ordinance,
yeah,
yes.
I understand we need an ordinance for that to back up the planning and zoning department to require that under subdivision.
There are certain setback regulations already in the zoning ordinance associated with, I believe, each different district. What the comprehensive plan was suggesting is to take a look at those and see if they are up to date and to see if they are... as strong as they should be. And one additional wrinkle that the comprehensive plan suggested was a maximum setback. That is, when you think of setbacks most times, it's the minimum distance that you can be away from, the curb line, you know, the right-of-way. The maximum looks at it the other way, and they say you can be no further than, I'll say, 40 feet away from the curb line. And the idea there is sort of to enact a design standard that forces developers, other applicants, to put parking on the side, in the rear, by not providing enough for it in the maximum setback. Now, you don't have in all of your districts a maximum setback regulation, but what you do have is in the district designed to encourage this type of innovation, the residential planned community or the RPC district, you have the ability to introduce the kind of flexibility that would permit that type of maximum setback regulation. So we thought that it's pretty well covered there within the RPC area.
Is it in the cluster subdivision area?
No, just the ARPC is what he's saying, right?
That's correct.
Right.
The maximum setback.
We could look at it in other districts, right?
Yes. And the other thing that we were asked to consider was the green design. And as I just explained, we have a suggestion for that, in this case applying to the ES1 overlay zoning district. So we thought that as a result of those regulations, we'd pretty much covered what the comp plan was suggesting that we consider. And I'll try to move along and not spend as much time on all of these. The comp plan suggested you should look at your sign regulations. Council has done that and adopted a comprehensive sign ordinance revision. Open space definition was a concern very early in the preparation of the comprehensive plan. They said open space is great, but where should it apply, and what do we mean by open space? Well, council has pretty much pinned that down now with a strong definition. The next one has to do with superior design criteria. You recall that in order to give approval to a proposed cluster development, you have to find as a council that it consists or that it is designed in a way that you can designate it as superior design. But the trick was, or the hang-up was, that there wasn't back then any specific criteria for what superior design is. Since then, council, with some assistance from us in drafting that ordinance, has defined that and pretty specifically. And so at the same time, because the superior design concept refers to cluster development, we're also addressing the suggestion in the comprehensive plan that the county should take a look at its cluster development regulations to make sure that they're up to snuff. So now we have a new definition for superior design. It applies specifically to cluster development, so we think we've knocked off two birds with one stone in that regard. We've redefined superior design, strengthened the cluster development.
It's required. It's good.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Good.
I'll just direct you to the page 5 of the memo. And the other thing the comprehensive plan suggested you should consider is some kind of regulations with regard to the private providers of sewer service in county sewer service areas that presented some problems. There has now been adopted by council a new regulation that spells out the terms and conditions under which those private providers can move into a designated county sewer service area. And so that, in our view, had been addressed. The next, in boldface on page 5, the moderately priced housing unit program, the comprehensive plan said that's a great initiative. You ought to continue that. The county did that. And as I also understand, expanded it beyond just owner-occupied units to also include rental units. So we checked that one off.
You look at one of the ones that's coming before us and say that again, try to convince me that it's a good ordinance.
The moderately priced housing unit?
Yeah.
Okay. We didn't look the ins and outs of it. We were just saying, you know, had it been addressed or not.
Mm-hmm.
And
gotcha.
Yeah, okay, fine. All right. That covers all of the ordinances related to comprehensive planning and zoning that the council has adopted since the county comp plan was approved. We'd now like to move on to consider on your outline here, we're with other proposed ordinances. And the first one was TDR, Transfer of Development Rights. I'm on the bottom of page 5 and the top of page 6 in your memo. In the two other Delaware counties, they have transfer of development rights legislation. And the state said, well, you ought to consider doing one on your own based on that model. And while we don't have one that directly imitates those other two models, Sussex County does have a form, as explained in the comp plan, a form of TDR. And that is where the developers contribute dollars for open space, and in exchange, a certain density bonuses are provided, which, when you get down to it, that's basically the idea of TDR. So rather than reconstruct that whole program on the lines that the other two counties have adopted, we thought, well, this is working for Sussex County, and this certainly addresses the TDR concept. So it didn't seem to us to be necessary to go back and reinvent the wheel with regard to TDR.
And the difference is that TDRs in the other two counties, it's between a private landowner and a developer.
Two private landowners, yes.
Right here, it's between the county and a landowner. So the county gets the benefit of the density bonus money?
Yeah. In each case, the idea is to preserve open space. In the other two counties, they do it landowner to landowner. Here, the money goes to the county, who, with the assistance of the
Sussex Land Trust.
Thank you.
Right.
The Land Trust. Yeah.
Okay.
The open space
is preserved
that way.
That's the wrinkle that's different. Okay.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Agricultural zoning district. I'm not going to go into the details of it. You folks are aware of the state's agricultural zoning district and the incentives provided to preserve your agricultural land, either on a 10-year basis or to turn eternally by providing the development rights to the state. What the comprehensive plan suggested is that you may want to consider on top of that your own program. And when we looked at it, it didn't seem to us that any kind of thing that the county could adopt on its own would add any additional incentives for landowners to go with a county program rather than the state program. And just to remind everybody, of course, the county has been very active in providing some of the payment, a portion thereof, to landowners who want to do this same thing. So it seemed like the textbook example of being, redundant with respect to a new ordinance. So we passed that one by for that reason. We're suggesting, rather, that you pass it by for that reason. However, the county and the state open space program, well, in addition to the county, continuing to provide funds for it, we're suggesting that we could make one administrative type change here at the county staff level. Wouldn't require an ordinance, but would be a good idea, and that is in each time an additional property has its development rights preserved or it enters the 10-year program, that Lawrence and Company at the in the planning department put together a map and update and maintain, so we know exactly at all times how many and where they are, the acres located in agricultural preservation. So not a new ordinance, but a new wrinkle that would provide some additional information that's not handy at this point. The next topic that the comprehensive plan suggested we look at is wildlife habitat protection. Well, federal and state regulations through the NDPES stormwater regulations require a data search to make sure that any development over 1 acre is not going to potentially affect a rare or endangered species that's on the federal or state list. In addition, for larger developments, through the State Plus review process, they do a similar inventory with what they call key wildlife habitats, as they define it in their state wildlife plan. So we thought that with respect to identifying the potential danger of building where there are endangered, threatened, rare habitat, that the county does not have any additional information. There is no county database that Lawrence or anyone else could go to that would provide any additional information not already covered at the state and at the Soil Conservation Service district level. So it didn't seem that, well, that would be one of the ones where you could adopt the regulation, but we wouldn't have the mechanisms to carry it out, the manpower, the expertise, the additional information, et cetera. So that one, for that reason, we're suggesting that it's already covered. The next one was green stormwater management. The comprehensive plan, at the suggestion of the state, said maybe that the county should get, at the zoning level, should get more involved in green stormwater management. Well, that is the responsibility of the Sussex County Conservation District. It's overseen, or I guess rechecked, I'm not sure what the word is exactly, by the state DENREC department. So all of the best practices, they're consistent with county policy, but again, what additional regulations could the county add at the zoning ordinance level that aren't already under consideration by either the district, the Soil Conservation District, or the state?
Well, not everything has to go to Soil Conservation.
Yeah, well, when you disturb an acre, as I understand it, when you're just proposing to disturb 1 acre or more.
Most stuff does, yeah.
And as a result, most stuff does.
Yeah, I think most stuff does.
It's not what I've been told. If I have a house on a lot and next door to me is an unimproved lot.
Yes. No, they don't do single family homes.
Oh, well, how about that then?
No, they don't.
Well, then why not?
They have a standard form that they have to fill out when they get a permit, and then they have a detailed form for something greater or something more disturbing to find out.
So they have to have. Would they have to have a drainage, adequate drainage in on their property when they build the house?
They have to make a response to a questionnaire on the form.
That's it? No plan? It's minimal. I think we're vulnerable there. How about the minor subdivisions on roads? The minor subdivision?
They don't review minor subdivisions until they come in with improvements, then they have to do a standard form again. As they do it well. It's all based on the permit.
Based on the dwelling permit, okay. But would that one on 24, for instance, when their houses are built, would they have to have a drainage plan through Soil Conservation?
Not for a single family lot, for minor. But they have to review it, do the standard form, and then there's some criteria that the district can go in and investigate. The difficulty we have with the single family lots, the district basically says they don't have to enforce the permit. We could do that.
We could require that they have to have a plan. Could we not?
Well, they have to do a plan with the district, but again, it's only a standard.
No enforcement. How about inspection? We don't know whether they actually go about and do it or not. Because we have a lot of flooding. That's why, you know, I had a bad Christmas with a lot of flooding. A lot of constituents' homes are getting ruined with the flooding, and that's what I'm concerned about. Bad Christmas.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes. As I was just reviewing my outline, I neglected to mention something with respect to the wildlife habitat protection, the one above, the one we're talking about, stormwater management. And that is, in reading the literature and speaking to the state people that deal with this kind of thing, one of the things that is recommended is that as much as possible, that landscaping in a new development should consist on the plant side of using native species rather than exotic species or nuisance type species. Now, we didn't think that rose to the level of creating a new ordinance, but we were suggesting that the county continue to encourage the use of native species. In speaking with the county staff, it appears to be the case that most of the engineers and landscape architects who most frequently submit these types of developments to the county tend to go this way anyhow. So it seemed a good practice worth reinforcing. All right.
See, Chase, it's got Canadian, those cypress, Leland cypresses all around it. Is that, would you consider that one of the major?
No. Not native
species. No.
And what's happened is the new projects, we asked them to go to the state forester. State forester gives them a list of the type of vegetation they should plant, and they're typically native species. So it's getting better. Sea chases have existed for 5+ years.
But we don't have any enforcement. If we went out there and found a new subdivision and they did invasive species, we would
require a landscape plan, and that's what they're supposed to put in based on their plan.
And do we actually go out and inspect it after it's planted?
We have to go out and inspect it. Yeah, okay. The difficulty is the older subdivision, they just had a buffer. It wasn't really a good description. The state forest didn't give us like really good list. They just said the plant's fine, and it might have been 2 rows of trees, and they put in
anything
almost. And on some of the projects, they stated they were to be 5 foot, and they put in 3 footers at the planting, and we had to take them out and put it in the 5 footer. Okay. So we've done that.
Okay. Well, my problem is that the people I represent don't know what's going on at that level. they'll come in and talk to you about these plans and what kind of trees are being planted, this kind of thing. And there's no way for them to track what's being done with these applications. They should know from start to finish what's going on with these applications from the day they're filed.
But they don't ask.
They don't know to ask.
You think a loblolly pine would be better than a Leland cypress?
I agree with you.
Which one do you think would be the best, Joan?
I think some sort of native plant would be better. Native tree.
I'll tell you one thing. A cypress or a Leland cypress will have more windbreak than a loblolly pine, I'll guarantee you.
I agree.
It may not be native, but it's far superior if you want all kinds of breaks.
You could be right.
This kind of talk is nonsense, what we're saying here, some of these things, I think.
You could be right.
If you're not general, we need to find out where we're at before we ask all these. Well, go ahead. I don't know if I can last another 3 hours. Go ahead.
Mr. Driscoll, you're doing a great job keeping this meeting moving forward, so I will encourage you to continue.
Sure.
Okay, no more out of you, sir.
We'll not have that either.
You got it all down here, buddy.
I like it. I'll tell you.
I'm
liking him more all the time, Paul. Go ahead. Keep it
okay,
up.
Okay, I'm rolling here. At the bottom of page 7, the next thing that the comprehensive plan asks us to consider is removing what the plan called some barriers to manufactured housing. As I understand it, Dave, the Planning and Zoning Commission has taken a memo prepared by URDC, and they're using it as a basis for looking into this a little more closely?
Well, actually, the County Council has appointed a committee to work on manufactured home issues and zoning issues, and that committee has a meeting scheduled in early February.
All right. Part of the problem has to do with the federal law effectively states that, number one, you must allow those homes anywhere you allow single-family homes, but more importantly for this purpose, they provide the construction details and the related specs. So within that framework, we're trying to, trying to examine different ways that you can encourage a replacement of the older mobile homes and the older sheds associated with them, and the point is that work is underway.
Is there a federal law that, like if we have a medium residential or MR district, it calls for stick-built and everything else, it does not permit manufactured homes, correct?
No, it does not permit a manufactured home park. What
park,
the federal law says...
Or if somebody wanted to just go in and put a manufactured home in,
right in the middle of a
subdivision.
Yeah.
It's not permitted.
It's not permitted. But now, is there actually a federal law can force us to...
Allowed in other districts of the same caliber, which is a general residential
which
district,
meets
which
the
same lot size, same
okay,
dimension.
Okay.
A little gray area of law there.
Thank you.
Yeah,
but we couldn't.
That's why you're in land use and not in law.
We could not say that we don't have it. We don't want to have any new mobile home parks, manufactured home parks.
No,
legally.
We could not say that because
Anne Arundel County did it 40 years ago.
Uh huh. Well, I can't speak to that.
That's why you're from there.
As I understand it, that we have to provide at least some land for all different types of development.
Must have predated that federal law. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Okay. The next one was the ag business zone. We talked about that. If you go to the back page of your outline. And again, the environmentally sensitive additional regulations, we covered that. This is just reinforcing that here for you, that we're talking about two things, the impervious surface ratio maximum, which you don't have now, and as discussed, a possible incentive in terms of height for people who decide to follow the green design certification process. All right, the next one that we haven't looked at yet is on the bottom of page 9, and that had to do with the demolition of historic structures. At the time that we were preparing the comprehensive plan, there was some concern raised about a historic structure that, for whatever reason, ended up being demolished in the Seaford area. And there was a fair amount of publicity about it at that time. I don't recall the name of it in particular, but as a result of that, and as a result of the mandate just to look at historic resources in the comprehensive plan, the comprehensive plan was suggesting what additional measures that you might do as a county to not necessarily to prevent demolition, but maybe to delay it so that people have the chance to review if any alternatives are available. Well, again, it seemed that because there were so many historic structures in the county that and because the majority of them were in the towns rather than in the county per se, that maybe instead of a regulation that would delay demolition, as was suggested, and end up in the same spot just 30 days later, that maybe that wouldn't be very effective. What could the county do? Well, we're suggesting that the county could do two things at the administrative level, again, not at the ordinance level. The planning and zoning staff, when an application comes in, could notify the historic planner that it may potentially affect one of the resources listed in the comprehensive plan as historic, and there's about 5 pages of those in the comprehensive plan. Secondly, if it becomes a situation where it is indeed a valuable historic structure, that the county staff, the county administrator, whoever that would be, on the county, at the county administrative level, could suggest to the historic planner that maybe he might want to provide some additional ideas to that landowner that might potentially result in some course other than demolition of the property. And let me give you an example. In a residential area, you may, for example, where commercial is not currently permitted, suggest that maybe an adjustment is required here that would allow, for example, a bed and breakfast, a use of a historic structure that's not strictly residential but would preserve the structure. Secondly, under some tight guidelines, you may also permit the use of that structure that's currently residential in some type of office use, smaller office use. Again, with the idea of preserving the economic viability of the building and therefore preventing a historic building from being demolished.
Did you say apply for demolition? Apply to the county for demolition? Did you say that? We don't have permit for that. Is that what you're thinking when you come to the county for the permit?
No, but if it's part of a subdivision development, for example, a demolition would be noted on the plan.
You're talking about older buildings?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. How would we know that somebody was intending to demolish the building?
No, if a demolition is proposed as part of a subdivision application or other type of development application, that would come to the attention of the county staff.
Otherwise, it doesn't.
Pardon me?
Otherwise, we wouldn't know about it.
No.
I don't.
Pardon me?
We don't require a permit for that, do we?
Not now.
No, he's saying that the note on the application will be noted that this particular structure would be demolished.
Yeah.
That would be noted as it went through the process.
For a new
subdivision.
New
no, we don't have. No, he's not talking about older stuff. It's just scattered around the community.
Yeah, the one thing we're trying to avoid is to stick the county's nose into the business of regulating people who want to rip down simply what's an old falling down barn, a shed, something like that.
Amen. Amen.
Yes, sir. The idea is to focus attention on something that's genuinely, you know, a historic resource.
Right.
Asbestos, thank you very much.
Hmm?
What about the asbestos that could be in a building? Well,
that's required. Other
agencies by state law. You can't.
Yeah, it's not us. We don't require anything with asbestos.
Well, that's what we need to know.
Okay. I'd like to direct your attention, please, to page 10 on the memo. And there is a brief narrative there in regard to traditional neighborhood development. And let me define that for you. It's a type of development that incorporates really the best features, some of the most attractive features of older style subdivisions. And when we talk about that, we're talking about street trees, street lights, front porches, maybe modest densities, and setbacks that aren't that discourage parking in the front yard, examples like that. And a lot of those had developed, of course, without the help of Sussex County zoning ordinance. And we're thinking that within the residential plan communities, the RPC option, anytime a developer wants to get innovative, make that market choice to include all of these type of features in his or her development, that it should be regulated or submitted under the RPC overlay regulations that permit that kind of flexibility. In our view, if you started requiring all these things at the design level, that is, if you started to get zoning to regulate really what ended up to be market design decisions, that one-size-fits-all approach, you could end up adding a tremendous amount of expense to every development, and that might then eliminate the possibility that you have two types of developments. One that includes all these extras for developers who made that market decision and for people who want to spend that money. And then secondly, it would have more affordable type housing that's a little slimmer on the extras. So in order to make sure that there's still that supply of the affordable housing, in addition to the more decorative type of building option, in order to ensure that, we're suggesting that you use that RPC. It's designed to permit that sort of flexibility rather than requiring all these things in every residential subdivision.
Right.
How many RPCs have we had this year, this past year?
It slowed up.
Mm-hmm. Now, the last item, the comprehensive plan, and I'm at the bottom of page 10 now and moving on to page 11. Comprehensive plan suggests that the county should consider the possibility of requiring recreation facilities like playgrounds and or trails in every larger development. Well, we've got that partly addressed already because through the superior design ordinance that affected cluster development, you are now required as a developer to provide a pedestrian trail system, and it must be accessible to any trail system that comes immediately adjacent to that land. And it must be accessible to any public open space that's immediately adjacent to that land. So we've got that covered in part on the trails end. So the question was a policy question. Should Sussex County require all development or all larger development to provide playgrounds as part of their market package? And for the same reason mentioned before, we're suggesting not. We think it should be a market decision for those who are interested in paying the additional price required to move into a development that provides those type things. And as a result of making it a market decision rather than a one-size-fits-all again, we still preserve the opportunity to construct more affordable housing that doesn't have, for example, all those extras involved with it.
Now, are we going to expect that the person who does the affordable takes that affordable route? Should it be noted from day one that this is being designed this way with the lack of all these features because it's going to be affordable? So should it be labeled somehow affordable? Or because I know developers that are just trying to save a buck. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're trying to, you know, get away from everything, and they're going to say it's affordable, but the next thing you know, it's down at the beach, and it's not affordable. But anyway, I don't want a loophole there that gets the developer away from giving stuff that people end up coming back here asking for, like street lighting districts and sidewalks and stuff like that. And we ought to have some minimal requirements. I mean, even people in affordable housing probably would like sidewalks.
Sure. And we're not suggesting that those basic elements that you allow anyone to get away with not constructing those. We're only suggesting that maybe something like a playground associated with your development might be an expensive extra that we don't necessarily have to require every time someone builds a residential subdivision.
Right, but probably the affordable ones are more focused to the families, and they probably need that more than, say, the upscale retirement community
as a planner rather than a real estate developer, I don't find myself getting involved in that. I think that's a market decision for them.
Right.
405? Is it 405 already?
No, you get. You,
I'm impressed. We will go ahead and open the council floor for any discussion. If there is something that Mr. Driscoll reviewed that you'd like to return to, we'll certainly take advantage of our time. Ms. Deaver, have you anything?
No, not at this time. Thank you.
Mr. Vincent?
No.
Mr. Wilson?
Absolutely not.
Okay. Looking at other issues, I did say that we would afford council the time to talk about other issues. Before we go there, though, I would like to open it up to planning and zoning. If any of the planning and zoning commissioners have any thoughts they'd like to share, this would be a good time. Mr. Wheatley?
Could they come to the microphone?
Come on up.
This is being broadcast.
As I'm listening to the discussion, Bob Wheatley with Sussex County Planning and Zoning Commission.
Had 3 minutes.
Right.
Get
that timer out. I can beat that. Turn around so I can see it.
No.
The only thing I wanted to point out is that new regulation does not fix old problems. Those old problems are still going to be there. So the way to fix those is to not enact new rules, because we've learned from those situations. As you could hear of Lawrence stated two or three times, well, that's the way we did it then. This is the way we did it now. So we do it now, and it's a better situation, and those things, you know, aren't happening. So I just would like us to keep in mind that a new rule, a new regulation, doesn't fix an old problem necessarily. So, you know, when we're doing this, let's just keep that in mind. Thanks.
Could you give me an example of that?
Yeah, some of the flooding issues that I know that you're concerned about.
Yes.
Those are occurring in places that have been built for years and years that were done before there were any rules at all in place. Now you've got stormwater rules and so on, and you don't have near the amount of problems that you might have otherwise had. You know, that's the kind of thing I'm thinking of. It doesn't really go back and fix the old ones. It just keeps it from happening again in the future. So,
talking about stormwater, please. I guess I'm okay to say something, Vance.
Yes, please, Mr. Wilson.
I could take you all on a little trip this afternoon and show you a pond, probably about 2 acres. This guy spent probably $30,000-$40,000 digging a hole, probably 20 foot deep, and the stair stepped in and put all the grass in it. And he had the stormwater program set up right down to a T, just what stormwater people ordered. But guess what? He forgot one thing. When you have big rains, like 3 foot, we had 38 inches, which you guys were farmers, you'd understand what I'm talking about. We were stuck in the fields, every farm in the county was stuck. And water, this is not an ordinary year. If you're gonna plan every year like this year, we sure have enough ditches. But the problem is the tide out here was higher than we're trying to ditch to. But anyway, to get back to this water, has completely run over, and he has 3 foot, as much as 3 foot of water running up the street out of a storm water drain. What he actually done is create a problem, because the ground there was a sponge before. Now water runs the least resistance and always runs downhill. See, so when these things happen, here we go. The storm water management per se is bunk. If you really want good storm water management, you'll get some ditches and run it to the lower ponds or somewhere, get rid of it. This storm water management, I sit on a storm water management board, and it's just, we're not heading in the right direction. In fact, I invite the storm water people and the soil conservation people come with me, and they're well advised on this, and they know it doesn't work. In fact, they was telling how this good as this storm water thing is, and I said, come on, we'll go look at this. Let me tell you something. They're looking at it another way. They don't have, the answer's not there. The answer is try to get rid of this water, get some good drainage, and work in that way. Like Commissioner Wheatley there said, how are we going to go back and force these people that's got old homes and put there and say, we demand you to start digging ditches? And who's going to pay the bill? We're not going to get this done overnight. We only have this range of probably about once every 20 years. I've been here all my life. Just didn't move here in the last 4 or 5 years. I've been here for 70-some years, and never saw a wettest season this fall as I saw this year. So how are you going to get people 5 years from now, when we're going through drought after drought, dry weather, and start digging ditches? I'll guarantee you the wetlands people will be on your back, and we've already went through that. We'll say, oh, no, you can't be digging ditches, can't be cleaning out ditches, because you're draining our wetlands. So you're be damned if you do, and you're be damned if you don't. I'm telling you, it's not as simple, Joan, as it looks. It's a complicated matter, and nobody wants water in their yards, but everybody wants green grass. Everybody wants plenty of water in their wells. They want the water table up, but only a certain height. You know, I told my neighbor he had that problem. I said, you ought to pray and tell the Lord, because he controls it all.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. May I respond to that?
Ms. Deaver, if you could maybe try to direct your responses to Mr. Wheatley's points. I'm trying to have council respect each other's opinion.
Mr. Wheatley, what I'm concerned about is for new structures, when they go up, that it be done with an adequate drainage plan. That's all my concern is. I don't know what kind of ordinances we would need. That's all I'm looking at. I'm not talking about existing subdivisions. That's somebody else's problem. That's the state's looking at that. And I think it would be a very simple thing. That's all I'm asking for.
Deaver, it'll start out as a very simple thing. It won't end there.
If my neighbor builds a house next to me, I don't want the water coming over to my lot, and I want to be protected against that.
If the subdivision is properly designed, it's highly likely, unlikely that would happen. That's what I'm saying.
My subdivision came into existence in 1960. Didn't have anything like that, you know. You know, so I'm talking about, you know, existing lots. They may have of any age. But when a new structure goes up, the people next to that structure should be protected from somebody that wants to bring in a ton of soil and have it all drain elsewhere. You know, that's all I'm asking for. I don't think that's a big thing.
Just soil conservation doesn't have the funding and the personnel to go and look after each residential lot, and that's why they've chose not to address residential lots, and they're trying to emphasize the more important things that they do have the staff and the personnel to address. And that's why we're not doing single-family homes. They're exempt, so scattered empty lots in these older subdivisions still. You just hope that when somebody comes in and builds a house and they grade everything, that it works. So, I mean, but there isn't any agency looking out for those, and I don't believe there's any way that we could probably get that at this point because of lack of state funding and monies throughout
staff resources. Yeah.
Well, just, I mean, throughout the whole, all levels of government right now, we're pinched with money, and I can't imagine that we would take on more enforcement like that. So that's the reason they years ago decided they couldn't keep up with what was happening, so they let the residential lot slide. So
we just give them permits and let them go at it.
That's the way we do it.
Well, that's just so irresponsible.
Mr. Wilson, briefly, please.
I'd like to make a quick comment. My dad would, if he's lived, be over 100 years old. I know that might not be important to you, Joan, but he was pretty important to me. But anyway, he made a pretty smart statement. He said the best time to go buy land is after a big rain. Think about it, Joan.
That's right.
If you got problems with water, go after a big rain. You say, well, I'm not going to buy that piece of land. Look, it's flooded. That's the problem, people. You know, they want to buy the land, want to buy the swamp, buy a good price. Then they want the rest of the taxpayers to drain it for them.
Okay. I would invite other commissioners, if you have comments, please take advantage of this workshop. Okay. Council, we said that we'd open the floor up to other issues. Mr. Cole, I believe you have one in particular.
Yeah, I had a couple that I've just suggested here in the last couple of days, and I thought there was a consensus from the council on a couple of these things. One was B1 zoning right now. Paul, we have...
which zoning?
I'm sorry. B1.
B1.
B1. And basically what we're seeing a flood of conditional use applications, and we find that the state agencies will look at them more favorably because they're defined to a couple uses or one use or something like that, and they can actually gauge the amount of traffic, et cetera, or other impacts that would have. Right now we have these commercial districts that basically are all encompassing of a whole long laundry list of all these activities, and a lot of people would say, you know, I don't mind if it was this, but I don't want this. And obviously a convenience store... You know, I see some of these places, you get coffee in the morning, you know, the traffic is just in there and crazy like crazy, but then maybe something else wouldn't have the impact. So what I would like to see is maybe some sub-zoning categories, and I think I would like to see it maybe in B1, just because a lot of our conditional uses could and should be B1s, because they don't really have this quasi-public use or whatever in the definition of a conditional use. So we're on a borderline on whether we could, you know, legally I guess, enforce a lot of our conditional use approvals.
Yes, we are.
And so I would like to see a B1 that's more appealing to the applicants as they come in and they have some choices. So we could have B1 / professional buildings or medical offices, I think. B1 / restaurant, you know, fast food type thing. So we can put some of these uses in little categories that then we know what they're dealing with. State and DelDOT know what they're dealing with. Sewer people know what they're dealing with. Everybody then has a better feel, because when we rezone something B1 or CR2 or whatever it's called nowadays, they sit there forever, and anything on that whole list could apply. So when the guy came in originally said, I'm going to have mini storage, and you end up with a package store, or somebody says, I'm going to have a beauty parlor, and we end up with a movie theater, you know, or whatever, or a gas station. So anyway, and it could happen 10 years down the road because a change of zone doesn't sunset. Unless we had, again, gentlemen, planning zoning, you might want to consider that. If we have sunsetting ordinances, if you come in here and say, I want this rezoned such and such, and in 10 years nothing happens, it ought to maybe revert back like we do with subdivision, and then make them reapply and come back in. That'd be another way to maybe address some of these things. But anyway, I would like to see some subcategories. I thought there was some support here, and that we could maybe not break up every little thing and try to micromanage it all, but I think there are some major categories we could make subcategories, and would be more helpful to the people that live in the area, be more helpful to this county council making decisions, and maybe even for the applicant when they're making their applications.
Before you go to your next item, could I offer the council the opportunity to comment if they'd like? Mr. Vincent?
I just, one of the things I've had some thought about and would like to see us take a look at is, especially in commercial zone, what I hear from people a lot of times is they're not necessarily opposed to a specific project, but obviously once you change the zoning, opens up a great big window in some cases of things you could do. Right. You come in and get approval for something today and sell it tomorrow, somebody else becomes a gas station now or whatever.
Right.
Something in the commercial side that it would be, let's see how I want to word this. As one person said, almost like a CU on steroids, but something that is site specific and it is commercial, and they come forward with everything.
Understood.
And
yes.
When you do that, then you either you do it or you don't do it. And if you approve that, that's what you're going to get.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And if that use goes away, that zoning change goes away, and it's back where it came from.
Okay.
I think that would alleviate some people I hear in the public concerned about especially commercial districts.
Mr. Driscoll.
May I have a minute just to talk about some of the other communities and counties that we've worked in, how they've handled this same issue? There is a difference between certain commercial uses and other commercial uses. There's a long way difference between a mom-and-pop store, a deli that makes sandwiches, and at the other end of the spectrum, a Home Depot, an automobile dealership, a multiplex movie theater, and what they've done is to simply split the commercial district into what, in many cases, they call a C1 and a C2. The C1 is designed primarily for those highway-oriented uses that I just named, the Home Depot, the auto dealership, the multiplex theater. The C2 is designed more towards serving neighborhood convenience needs.
Such as?
Such as a small convenience store, maybe one without gas pumps, such as a deli, such as a mom-and-pop type commercial establishment, and I could provide you with a long list of related things.
Okay. But I see, Paul, more conflicts between, we have like around Lewis and places where the professional type buildings, campus style things like that, they can fall into the B1 district. A doctor's office and all that stuff, or insurance office or something like that, all falls in those categories. And a lot of people wouldn't have a problem with that because, again, the traffic patterns of a doctor's office or something like that would be different than, say, a Royal Farm or a Wawa or, you know, those types of stores. So,
well, you may
in other words, what I was leading to is maybe breaking it out in a couple different, you know, professional-type office space.
Yes. You can do the same thing that I just described with respect to office. If you are proposing the construction of a multi-tenant office building, that's one thing. If you're proposing to rehabilitate a certain building to hold a single law office, That's another thing. And those are just two examples at A to Z at opposite ends of the spectrum. So you can regulate that in the same way. You can regulate office. You can regulate commercial by how intensive a use it is.
In other words, it can be done, I guess, if we have the will to want to break it up and mm-hmm. Do something like that. Mm-hmm. So I think what I've suggested, we could probably come together and find something that would be cover any of these areas and similar to what you just said. So there's ways to do it.
In fact, done all the time.
Right, done all the time. Right. I've been to many communities, and I see signs on the roadside for sale, and it'll say commercial, and then it'll be restaurant or hotel. I know some places it says approved for a hotel or something like that. So we could break things down if we want to see how to do it, Mike, and that's just how we want to skin the cat because it's been done many, many times over and over. So,
Mr. President?
Yes, Mr. Moore?
In light of some previous conversations the council has had in that exact regard, we have been looking at statutes and ordinances in other jurisdictions to see how they're broken down. Many of the municipalities actually have them broken down, as you indicated, in order to make it such that if someone applies for a certain thing, the public knows that something can't be substituted in a more onerous use. And so we are looking at that and plan to have a packet for you.
Very good. Okay. That'd be great.
And similar on that, Mr. President, was the I brought up about a week or so ago because the state of Delaware, some of our representatives here in the county, we heard something this morning about the casino industry and all that kind of stuff. And we don't have really a zoning category that plugs that in other than a commercial district or, I guess, a conditional use. And I believe that these, if you look up at what these facilities look like, they have tremendous impacts on traffic and impacts on this, you know, you can a whole list of things. So I was suggesting that we also make maybe a separate zoning category for those intensive types of uses and zero in on casino, racino type things. And I think Mr. Moore has actually looked into that. So I don't know. I was thinking we might have a special. We did it for amusements a few years ago where amusement parks were permitted use.
Yeah.
And we pulled them out and we put them somewhere else.
I think you said one of your original concerns was not to micromanage. But I think that there's a lot of opportunity to break it up in the way that we described without coming anywhere near micromanage.
That sounds awful close to me, like micromanaging. Tell somebody, if they come before the council, say, sorry, sir, this business won't work. We're not going to approve it. You're going to go in this business. That's almost telling man what kind of business you're going to.
No, we're not saying that.
What you said?
No, we're saying that there'd be a zoning category. So if you come to this county and want to make an application for a professional building, we might have a category for it, Sam. We didn't say it was no to it. And we also said if you wanted to come to this county and have a racino, casino, or whatever you want to call them, we have a zoning category, and they have to apply under that, and there would be certain standards they would have to meet. Nobody has said no to anything. We're making it available to them, and we just know that what we've made available to them, they can do, and here's how we would here in Sussex County would like it to be done.
Just some suggestions on appropriate uses in appropriate locations.
Yeah, something like that. But we're not saying no to any. We're not putting a blanket on anybody. So if that's the interpretation, that's wrong.
Anything else, Mr. Cole?
I got another thing, but I'll let.
Okay, go ahead, George. No.
Okay, my last thing. Since I've got the floor. For years, as I've sat here, and Vince and Everett can perk their ears up on this one. We sit here. We had five different definitions of open space. Instead of having one, county position on open space, everybody had their own, opinion. The same thing's happening with the land use plan. Once we adopt these land use plans, I've always been told when you put something into ordinance form, it becomes law. And we've had court cases at the state level in different states or whatever, but I'm sure a Chancery Court judge could tell us what he thinks a land use plan is. But I have sat here, and it's a guide, it's a reference, it's law, it's all over the books. I would like to have, and I'm glad we have now a definition, a county definition, so we can all have personal definitions, but we have a county definition now of open space. Can we all get on the same page? Is the land use plan law? Is the land use plan a guide? Is it a reference? Do we have to follow it? What the heck is it? I've heard all everything, so I would like our legal staff, we got three legal firms. Mm-hmm. Can we get one decision out of three legal firms that would tell us what a land use plan is? But you don't have to say now because yours might be different from his, and the other third attorney's not here. And I wouldn't even mind maybe, Everett, I don't know if this is appropriate or something, maybe even get an opinion from one of our Chancery Court judges. How do the courts interpret the land use, the county land use plan. I get these, what is it, the lawyer quarterly or whatever comes out every once in a while.
I guess it comes down to a matter that what Delaware case law establishes as to how much the zoning ordinance is obligated to follow the right. comprehensive plan.
Could you speak to that, Mr. Driscoll? Could you speak to that, or could you speak maybe in broader terms of how you view, since you are our land use consultant?
Yeah, I won't comment on Delaware case law because that's a little bit beyond me, but I will say that the whole idea of the comprehensive plan is to provide two things. One, a guide for the future development and preservation of the county, but secondly, to provide some rationale for any new regulations that you may wish to enact. Really, basically, this exercise that we went through today, that your comprehensive plan in 2008 suggested all of these regulations. It suggested that we should give them serious consideration. We did, and here we are now. So that's what I view it as. Number one, a development preservation guide. Number two, providing the background rationale for any new regulations or the consideration of any new regulations having to do with zoning.
Well, I've had people tell me that they want a real land use plan.
A real what?
Land use plan. They want to know when they come here and buy a home, what's going to happen around them. They want to be able to look at a land use plan and be able to predict what's going to happen and, you know, what kind of things are going to be built next to them. And then everything really is zoned here for development, pretty much AR1. And you know, then they find that rezoning is happening next door to them. They don't feel that they have any kind of predictability.
I think you just answered your own question, Mrs. Deaver.
Well, then I'm pretty smart.
Come on up, please. Mm-hmm. Could you?
You just answered your own question. You said the land use plan should allow people to know what to expect, and then you said everything is zoned for development. Therefore, people coming here should expect
a certain amount of development, yeah.
Thank you.
I'm not sure that our land use plan actually, I'm not sure that our land use plan does not really help them in predicting what is going to come next to them, what is going to happen next to them.
Is that the purpose of the land use plan, to help
people? Well, I don't know. I've had people ask me for a real land use plan. They don't think that we're planning.
That was part of my question.
Yeah.
Right. We had Bill Green years ago who challenged the county and on you know, a land use. Joe Conaway's back here nodding, smiling. The problem is, and I've had, I'm down at the beach. I got a real estate license. I know all the developers. I know all the realtors. And I had a guy who I think highly of came to me one day and says, George, here's the problem. The problem is your land use plan says one thing and your ordinances are something else. So the land use plan is an ordinance. It's got the force of law, and then you've got your ordinances, which are also force of law, and there's a big gray area. He says, what do we do? Because we stand up in front of us in here, and then all of a sudden we're in compliance with your ordinance, but we're not in compliance with your land use plan.
Well, I would suggest that he follow the zoning
ordinance. That's why I'd just like to see we get past all that and get to a point where the land use plan and the ordinances support one another.
The zoning ordinance is supposed to provide the regulatory teeth to help implement the comp plan.
But what if
that's simple?
No, I agree. But I mean, I would love to have, because we are in Delaware, we are in Sussex County, and when things get challenged, we sometimes get blown away. Like, how did they come up with that conclusion? So, again, I don't know, Vince and Everett, if you could maybe get together and give us a legal opinion that will be the county's legal opinion of what the land use plan stands for, or what it is, and what we can expect, or something like that.
I think you make a good point, Mr. Cole. I won't put Everett on the spot. He's
our lawyer.
Rather new here. But Vince, just for today's purpose, could you come up and share your view of this question?
Well, I was trying to avoid that. I was trying to get one unified view, let them talk it over. But you're trying to upset the apple cart. I don't know.
Been around. How long have you been with the county?
Take your bar number, please.
Yeah, that's right.
Vince Roberts and Griffin and Haggett, 3315 is a bar number. That's kind of a joke at planning and zoning when lawyers come up. I've been at this since, I guess, 2003, January 1 of 2003, with planning and zoning in the county. And there are a myriad of cases that have dealt with comp plans, both municipal and county, in the state of Delaware. And it's pretty clear that, as Mr. Cole said, comprehensive plans have the force of law. It's equally clear that the Court of Chancery, as Mr. Phillips, I think, mentioned, says that, and you put me on the spot, so I'm going to probably mess this quote up, but they can't be so inflexible you know, that they're rigid documents. I mean, so we've got court decisions that say that you have to have flexibility built into your comprehensive land use plans. And one of the things I think that sort of comes into play with the county's comprehensive land use plan is, you know, we do have certain regulations in there with the, you know, the town centers and the environmentally sensitive development district overlay zones and some of the other things that are in that comp plan. So there is some overlay of guidelines that an applicant would have as to what path they would take with a development, you know, whether it's a subdivision or a cluster or some of the different things. I mean, there is that in the comprehensive plan. You know, we're not talking about a municipality which has a finite area, you know, where it's easy to say that in the southwest corner of the town, we think it should be industrial. You know, Sussex County isn't dealing with that on a comprehensive land use plan level. So we get back into that, you know, sort of overall scheme where you can't have a rigid document that's totally inflexible. I know that doesn't answer your question, but the courts haven't really. They said on the one hand, they got the force of law. On the other hand, it's got to be flexible. So that's where we are. You know, it's hard for me to stand here and give you a this is what it is answer.
Well, Vince, here's the dilemma, or my dilemma. This morning, we had an application, and the Planning and Zoning Commission had said that the application was not in compliance with the land use plan. Then the applicant had his, you know, reasons and everything. The applicant says the application is in compliance with the land use plan. It would be nice for somebody to be able to say, yes, that application's in compliance,
that's
or
right.
No, that application's not. It can't have it both ways. That is where we get into trouble and makes it very difficult. Who do you believe? Well, I feel that if the people we hire, the people we appoint, suggest that it is not in compliance, you know, I put a lot of weight to that. And then the attorney who you know is getting paid to make this application, of course he's going to say it's not, you know, it's in compliance. So where can we fall when we get stuck in that position? How do, you know, our tell me what to do.
Well, let me interject.
Not you, no, I'm talking to him.
You make a very good point.
Show me your degree.
Let me just suggest that we decided this morning, planning and zoning, listened to both sides, and on a 3-2 vote on a very difficult question, they said, no, it did not comply with the land use plan in essence. Council, which is elected by the people, also had the opportunity to review the evidence, take into consideration planning and zoning's decision, and this body, by a 3-2 vote, also said, no, it did not comply to the level necessary to approve. Seems like the system is working.
Okay.
Maybe we don't need elected officials and commissions if it is completely black and white.
Right.
But as far as I know, most people would appreciate having elected officials.
But no, that's legitimate. Now, what you're saying is very legitimate. But I think it's also legitimate to say that it's either in compliance or not in compliance. I mean, again, most plans you can follow and come to a conclusion, like I said, if they're in or not. And that's where I think that it shouldn't be arbitrary and, you know, arbitrarily decided each time we have an application. Is it in the appliance? Is it not? I don't know.
Well, I think that I'm absolutely not going to comment on the application this morning.
Right.
But,
no, I don't.
I mean, there are certain situations where, you know, that would be the case. Like, there's certain things, again, speaking off the top of my head, that you couldn't do in, you know, a low-density area that you can do in a developing area. You know, moderately priced housing units, I think, is one. You know, so there are things, there are things that the comp plan does say you can do in this area and you can't do in that area. I mean, so it's not that vague in how it's written. It just, you know, depends on the specific incident you're dealing with or application.
I have a legal question.
Okay. Ms. Deaver and
then
Mr. Vincent.
Go ahead, Mr. Vincent. He hasn't had much to say. Go ahead. So you raise your hand.
Yes,
I just want to say that it would appear to me that to do what Councilwoman Deaver proposed, that people want to know when they buy their lot that this is that you would at some point in time have to adopt a land use plan that from the day you adopt it can never change.
It's
the only way you're going to know what's exactly going to be there now and 10 years now and 20 years now and 30 years from now.
Can I ask this question before you finish? There's a way of knowing how to control your property side of you. Buy it. That's property rights.
Well, I understand that, Sam, but I guess my point is, my opinion is that these things, they're reviewed every 5 years because there are changes that occur in what people want or what people need in this county. And some people have to realize, you know, you're moving here from where they move here from, and it's a rural area. And when I have sometimes people complain because they bought a house, and this spring the farmer spread chicken manure on there and they smell it. That's part of a rural, that's rural Delaware. And that's not going to change. Or you smell a hog farm, or you smell chickens being grown. That's who we are.
That's right.
But I don't think we're ever going to have a plan that if it can't be flexible and reviewed and looked at and updated.
But we do. We're required by law.
I understand that.
You know, every 5 years is it a review and all that stuff. So it's a constant review.
The only way somebody's going to know that when they buy this lot or this piece of property, that this is what's going to be around them forever.
Oh, no.
Okay. Somewhere you've got to adopt a thing and say, but this is it. Mike, we don't need P&Z. We don't need us.
Mike,
this is what you can do.
No.
Let me ask you this. Let me throw this.
Mr. Cole has the floor.
If you come to this county and you either want to do a development, whatever, you're a developer, you're a single family home guy, you're a buyer, whatever, you ought to be able to look at that map.
Yep.
Now, what weight does that map have? Is that map a guide? Or is that map, once we adopt it, has that got some, that's the future land use plan. But once we adopt it, let's say that's now our current land use plan. Once that map is signed, sealed, and delivered, and I come to this community, I should be able to look at something and find out with some assurance, and I know things change like every 5 years, but then it goes through a process, public hearings, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
You just can't, okay. What weight does that map have? Is that like the land use plan? Is it just part of the plan? It's that map's flexible?
That's part of the plan, and I would say that, you know, you're entitled to look at that map and see what the current zoning is, and know that if you look at the zoning or subdivision code, this is what you can do in that current zoning, absent somebody going and applying for a change. You know, I mean, the way our process is set up, somebody can go through the public hearing process and change the land use next door.
I think that's the crux of it. They do not expect people, I think they don't expect that when something's AR1, they don't realize that it could be developed at any time. I don't think they realize it could be developed at any time. And they're looking for a plan. They're looking for some actual zoning around them that would say residential or agricultural, one or the other, but not this thing.
Do you mean forever?
This total county zoning of AR1 that could be popped up, houses popped up any time. That's very alarming for people.
Well, let me suggest that the green are protected areas, protected lands, agriculture preservation districts, which have protections based on the force of law. So if they were to buy next to a green area, correct me if I'm wrong, Lawrence, they have the assurance that they're looking for. Now, they may find that the land next to the green is more expensive because of those assurances, and they decide to go out maybe to an AR1 piece of land because it's more affordable. But then again, they have less assurances of what will be built.
So the only assurances, Vance, under your scenario is you got to buy near the green. There's none of these other colors. Somebody can't buy next to another color and have any similar assurances.
Yes, they can have the assurances, for instance, if they're in an AR1 area, that without an application and an approval process, there will not be a mall built next to them.
So you're saying the only green and state parklands, I guess state lands, is guaranteed nothing will change.
Mr. Robertson?
True?
Mr. Lang? Yes, Lawrence.
There's a couple different shades of green you have to look
at. Oh, you got to love it.
The one you have to look at is the farmland and ag infirmity. And you can look at the other shade of green for a 10-year basis to at least know that it's got to conform to what's around it. The ones in the lighter green are ag 10-year programs.
Mm-hmm.
So they could be
developed. There may not be the total 100% full assurance that you're looking for, and there certainly is nothing to suggest that assurance would be in perpetuity. But you have something more specific than this future land use map that's shown on the wall here. You have your zoning map.
Hey, zoning on that, on the map, also.
Right.
It's included in that map.
Well, you tell the people of Lewis how secure they feel about what's going on around them, around their town. How predictable is it?
Well, it's predictable to an extent. For example, if you're in a residential district, you know that no one's going to be building a shopping center in your district.
Do you?
Well, they can ask for a change of zoning.
Unless they go through a change of zoning, right. But
now, we could place a moratorium on all applications for change if that's what you desire.
We could have some real zoning.
No, we have real zoning.
It's less like everywhere else. I mean, this is pretty much, we're not anything...
You don't have AR1 in other places. You have A or R, one or the other.
They do have areas that have agricultural zoning areas, and I probably would be supportive of it, that our agricultural district was more restrictive, wouldn't allow, permit such a high density. That would truly protect our agricultural areas without having to go through a zoning process to increase the density. And I know down in Act, Lower Eastern Shore, you're looking like one house per 10 acres, one house for 20 acres. Those are pretty extreme, but they do that pretty much elsewhere to protect agricultural districts. What we have isn't really a protection unless you get the state or somebody to buy your land.
Right.
Taxpayers buy your land, and then all of a sudden you get protected.
By your development rights.
Yeah, I don't like that either. Right. I don't think the taxpayers need to buy anybody to protect.
So in terms of today's agenda, you're suggesting two things, that we look into one, a more specific classification of commercial uses.
It would help.
And secondly, you're interested in seeing a better definition or an opinion on the power of the land use plan in law.
Well, I don't know if you should do that. I think maybe Everett and Vince ought to address maybe a land use definition of what we should look as the county's official position or something. The other thing is just, yeah, if we could break up the neighborhood business to give us some other, or even both, all commercial districts,
yeah,
to give some subcategories. I don't know if there's any, is there any problem with that, Mike, Sam?
I believe Mr. Moore said we're going to try to avoid building consensus in a workshop format. But it does sound like you put your ideas.
And the other thing was the casino type of thing, a special zoning category. As we see, that's something new that is coming down the pike, and we don't have any way really to address it.
Okay.
And I'd like to maybe see something for those extreme type of uses of commercial.
Okay.
Mr. Driscoll and Mr. Robertson, Mr. Wilson's been waiting patiently. Could you just hold on a second? Go ahead, Sam.
I guess I'm in this meeting also. But anyway, if you go to buy a piece of land today on a piece of farm property, I'll guarantee you, it says in there that you have to tolerate chicken manure, odor, smell, airplanes, dust. We don't care what it is. It's all in our regulations. It's all recovered. When you have no complaint, you wouldn't even get the first base to go against your neighbor on such a case as that. So we're covered. We're just as covered as you can get. Somewhere along, somebody's misunderstanding what the law is.
I agree with what you said.
Mr. Driscoll, did you have more comments?
No, I was just trying to summarize what we've heard thus far under the other issues.
May I ask one question before
yes,
you
Ms.
summarize? The state asks for us to come up with a land use plan every 5 years. And you have suggested ordinances in the land use plan. You've included them this time. Last time, too. But, I mean, anyway, so say that we were to look at all those ordinances or the rest of them and just ignore them. I mean, you know, just thumbs down on every one of them. How does that relate back to the state's certification of what they thought we were going to do? Or how do they know what we're going to do? All we said was that we were going to consider these. We didn't even say we were going to pass them or we're going to do the things that are... I mean, this is full of wonderful ideas. Congratulations. Good job. But I don't see the ordinances to put the wonderful ideas into action. So what if we never pass the rest of these and just say, no, we don't want that?
Well, a careful reading of that comprehensive plan will tell you this, that there are ordinances suggested in there, as you just described. But on the other hand, what's the county's obligation with regard to those ordinances?
What is it?
It's to consider them. To adopt them?
Just to look at them.
Not necessarily. To consider them.
To see them.
Given the criteria, like we talked about today, which ones are really in the best interest of the county, which ones may not be.
Mm-hmm.
That's your obligation. That's what that plan obligates you to do.
So what did the governor do when she certified it? What's the certification mean?
It means that the plan had a general consistency with respect to the livable Delaware concept and initiatives.
And then she retired and moved on.
Yeah, then she left. Okay.
Mr. Driscoll, I know where you want to...
Pardon me, Martin?
Past governor, because I sat on the advisory committee, we reviewed two Sussex County plans in my tenure of 6 years, the original one, and then a subsequent one that was certified last year. So the governor has a chance, if she doesn't feel the ordinances supported the previous plan, she could not certify the subsequent plan. So every 5 years, that process has an opportunity to say, no, we don't feel the county's lived up to their previous obligations, then they don't have to certify. In this particular case, the governor certified the subsequent plan, so I presume she must have felt satisfied with the previous work.
And Paul, the current governor is trying to streamline some of the process. Is it possible, I don't know if it's in your contract, that if, as we finish up on this, that you coordinate any what they're trying to do at this point? I don't know what they're trying to do, and somebody needs to be watching at it. But Lawrence, or anybody on your staff following what's going on? I read where the governor is looking to streamline some of the permitting process at the state level, and if that's going to have any effect on some of the time frames we've established here.
We've asked a question several times to the Austin State Plan Coordination staff.
Okay. I just wondered, is it something we should be, David, do you have any?
We did enter into an MOU a number of months ago with the state at their request so that for economic development reasons that we agreed to work towards expediting applications that affect the economy.
Is it somehow Godwin maybe could keep an eye on the state then? Maybe I don't think it falls under Paul's list of things to do.
Paul, I'm going to ask you not to summarize at the risk of building a consensus against legal counsel's advice, but rather staff. Clark has noted the conversation, and I suspect you'll find yourself in a meeting here soon to try to bring these thoughts together. I know you're moving forward on those items that you suggested are going to be coming to us in ordinance form. I would probably like to wrap this up. Does anyone else have anything they'd like to share?
Make a motion to adjourn.
Mr. Wheatley.
One point I think that needs to be made.
Can you come up, Bob, please?
The Planning and Zoning Commission takes an application and compares it to the ordinance that you folks passed down to us. If you don't like the land use plan, if you don't like the ordinances, then change them. Okay? Then change them. But if you do, then that's fine. Whatever you pass down to us, I guarantee you we will abide by it.
Thank you.
Anything else? I have a motion, Mr. Cole, to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Paul, we might do this again.